Welcome, everybody, back to Hot Rod Blues. This would be Season 3, Episode 1. And I'm your host, Sean Brereton, along with my fellow co-host here. We got
Mike Abbott from Steel Rose Metal Co.
And I'm Sean Young from Kingfish Metalworks. And tonight we have Mr. John Calley with us. Yeah. Hi, John.
John Calley's.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, John is definitely somebody that we have wanted on here for a long time because he's like a mad scientist and his place is awesome. But yeah, we've wanted to have John on for a long time. We just never really got around to it. Like, it's always something happened and we never got here. So luckily, we are finally here, and it's been a while for us. So we'll see how things go. We had a little hiatus.
Yeah. Yeah. We did. Yeah,
we all had a bunch of stuff going on. So, but yeah, we're back and can't wait for this season. We got some really cool stuff happening. So, so John Calley's. If you don't know who John Calley's is, well, the last name pretty much says it all. I think
you can Google it.
Yeah, just Google John. go to any AERA website or PRI or SEMA or anything.
His.
Yeah, or his own. Yeah, but John, let's. I'd like to start actually like back at the beginning.
All right.
I mean, let's go back to. What young John Calley's, how did you get into cars? What was your thing? And obviously you're an engineer. I don't know if you're an engineer by trade.
No, I mean engineer school.
Yeah, you did. Okay. So, well, let's start all the way back at the beginning.
Well, my dad came here from Germany at 7 years old, went through Ellis Island.
Wow.
And so dad was a self-made guy, and he was a pretty good football player in high school, and he got a scholarship to go to San Diego State.
Okay.
And so when he went there, and dad, as he told me, got off the bus, and he had $2 to his pocket.
Wow.
And so he went down and got a job at the cafeteria so he could eat. And then the cafeteria guy liked him and let him stay at his house. Anyway, he made it through 4 years, graduated, and he went to Oakland Tech High, where he was a history teacher and a football coach. And dad would go down every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and open up the gym at night. And, of course, all the other welding classes, your woodworking, everything was at the same time.
Yeah.
So he'd drag me along, and I go, hey, I want to go to the welding class. And of course, you know, I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
You know? So that's how I got started. And then I think it was, I got a 28 Roadster pickup in pieces when I guess I was 12 or 13. So I started building that at the house in our garage. I took over the garage. And pretty soon I got a 53 Chrysler V8 and had a 39 gearbox, you know, and an old Ford rear end.
So you're of age at this point. You're 16?
Or No, I was like 9.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When I was 7, I went to my dad. I said, I want to buy a set of torches. Well, I think they'd be very good. And I go, but I don't have their money. They're $75. Get a job. I said, doing what? Get a paper route. So it took me a year to earn $75 for my first set of Victor torches.
Wow.
And so I've been doing it ever since then. And it was funny. I think I was 14 when I finally got this hot rod steward start.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're so proud the first time you get something.
Yeah. Going.
Yeah.
So I drove out. Got on the street, and I was just going to go around the block. Well, when I was coming up the street, my mom's in the middle of the street, and she's pointing towards the garage, and she was not happy. And so I drove in the garage. I hear the garage door slam, and she's pounding 16-penny nails in the door so you can't open it again.
Really?
So that's how I got started. And then I think when I was 14, I took a 41 Lincoln and put a Chrysler in it, and, you know, just kept on doing stuff.
It's hot rodding.
Yeah, hot rodding.
So was your mom German too?
No, she was English.
Yeah, okay.
And so anyway, it was, you know, I just grew up, and of course, I grew up in Berkeley, California, so racing and all the drag strips, it was a big deal, and I'd hitchhike to the drag strip, you know, that's what you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then my dad bought a 36 Ford coupe, had a V860 in it.
It's my dream.
Yeah, and so dad would park it, and then I'd want to drive it at night, and you weren't supposed to, you know.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So he started chalking the tires, you know, you could see
so
it.
So you moved
could
see it.
Where yeah, yeah. Well, the guys down in Oakland did midget racing. So I got a 2-2 manifold for it, put that on, you know, just continually messing with stuff.
Right.
And, you know, so it turned into a pretty good welder and fabricator by, you know, learning.
Yeah.
And continue.
How did you learn back then? Like, what were you reading? Little pages?
No, the Carcraft magazine that was about this big.
Yeah, the little one?
Yeah, the little one.
Yeah.
And man, it came. It was a big deal. And you were in it going, wow, you know.
Yeah.
And there was a fellow in town that built hot rods. And I'd go down there and sweep the floor, and you weren't getting paid, you know, and I didn't care.
Yeah.
I wanted to be there. And he was the one that taught me how to do the curvature on pipes to look like an organ.
Hmm.
And it's a simple, kind of a cool deal, but he was putting a big pipe coming up each side of this roadster. And, we got to fix the ends this way. Well, how do you do it? Well, he showed me, and I've just kept it all along. I'm going to make an article out of it because it's so simple.
Right.
For people who don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I did that exhaust pipe coming through the same way, you know, doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a lifelong deal of learning stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? And so it came up, and then when I got out of high school, my dad said, look, you can go to work, go to college, or get a job and move out of the house. Those are the choices. So
yeah.
I went to work for a fellow by the name of Jarl DeBoer, who was had a foreign car shop. And Jarl, he was a graduate electrical and mechanical engineer from Cal, but he worked on.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'd go in there and he'd point and tell me, you know, how you do valve jobs. And I enjoyed it, but I was going to a junior college at the same time. And it just, you know, I was going to college to kind of get my dad happy.
Right.
Not that I was having a good time, you know.
Yeah.
I like working in the shop.
Right.
So then Oregon State opened up the first automotive engineering. And Dad knew the coach up there.
I don't know. Just keep on going.
Okay.
Yeah.
He knew the coach up at Oregon. And so he said, let's go up and take a trip and look at the engineering deal. I went, cool. So I go up, and the first thing is they take me into the shop, and I'm seeing all the machinery and stuff, and I just went, this is it. So that's where I went. That's where I graduated from.
Yeah.
And then I went to work for General Electric out of there doing these big computers. This was before IBM had invented the chip. So I was a mechanical guy in this great big computer. Well, it kept me out of the service because I could get 4F, you know, and so I was pleased with that because I didn't want to go to NOM.
Yeah.
And but then we're having an engineering meeting, and the boss brings in a deal. He hands out all this thing that IBM developed the chip. And my immediate boss looked at me and he said, this place will close in a year.
Wow.
So there I went, moved to Chicago, and at the time I had a Anglia with a small block in it, 2.4s on it. It was a pretty good little hot, it was my street car.
Yeah.
So I drove it across country to get to Chicago. Well, in New Mexico, I'm pulling in the service station, and a highway patrol guy comes in, and he says, well, what you got in that thing? And I said, oh, it's a little small block. And he said, you think he can beat my Dodge? And I said, well, I don't want to get a ticket. He said, you don't get a ticket. He said, let's go out at 35. I'll turn the lights on and let's hit it. So we go out and I just walk this guy. You know? Right. and so he, you know, he just waved and I just went on. Well, it had a 20-foot snow drift in Chicago when I arrived in this little angle, you have big tires on the back.
Wow.
And I'm going, this is not good. And so anyway, I managed to go by an old, I think it was a 56 Plymouth. I paid $20 for it. I went over to get it, and it would start, but I jumped in the front seat, and the seat went all the way through the floor to the ground. So I took a piece of plywood, and you know, right. I mean, you just made it work.
Yeah,
you know?
Made it happen.
And I that was kind of a fun time in Chicago, because I can remember going out on a Saturday night and having one too many drinks, and I got pulled over by a cop. Well, in Chicago, you pay him off.
You just give them money.
You just give them money. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd heard this, but in California, you didn't dare do that, or you'd go to jail.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of, and when I had backed out of this from this girl's house that I'd taken out, it caught the front bumper and bent it straight forward, but I didn't know that. So he goes, "Just what the heck is this?" I go, "What the heck is what?" So I get out and I go around and I see it and I think it's so funny. I started laughing. This guy says, "Look, can you get home?" I said, "Yeah, I think so." He says, "Get out of here, you know, let me go." So it was, I had a fun time in Chicago. That was, you know, as a young guy, it was great.
I was going to say, was this like your 20s?
Yeah. 20s? Mm-hmm, yeah. And so then I was working for Coach and Carr Corporation, and I was the guy estimating jobs. So we got the Bay Area Rapid Transit job. You know, the seats on the, but I had to develop a bunch of new stuff to make it work.
Right.
And I was, you know, you're young, I was 24, and, you know, I was worried if it didn't work, the company's going to go out of business and, you know, this isn't good.
Yeah.
So anyway, I managed a couple of more years there and I said, man, this, I've got to go do something else. So I moved back to San Jose, California. And I went to work for a Buick dealership as a mechanic.
Okay.
And I was there 2 weeks, and they went on strike.
Oh, wow.
So that wasn't good. So I'm at home doing a brake job on a car, and, of course, the goon squad came up, and, what are you doing, Callies? You're supposed to be on the
picket, you know, line.
On picket line. I said, I'm not going on the picket line. I got to make some money. And they said, well, you're out of the union. And I said, okay.
Great.
See you. And so anyway, that just went on from there. But then that opening came in with Pontiac Engineering. So I applied and got on and was working in Van Nuys, California. And I worked at the Southgate plant, you know, just a young engineer. And it was fascinating because at that time, that plant made the Bonnevilles. And they... And back in those days, they had the big wide chrome piece down the bottom edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching this guy who's trying to put it on, and he's going bam, 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 and then it'd fall off. And the foreman said, this guy isn't worth a shit. Look at, like, well, so I go down in the pit, and this guy's, you know, I'm in my 20s, he's in his 50s. And so it started with, just what the hell do you want? You know,
right?
And I said, well, I'm trying to understand what the problem is. And he said, it's this shit that you're sending me to put on this car. The clips are no good. The parts don't fit. Okay, well, let me take the stuff. So I go back to the lab and I lay the stuff out and it's both screwed up. So I get new parts in about 3 weeks coming out. And I'm standing watching him. And I hear the thing go, click, click. This goes down the line. And I said to the foreman, yeah, that guy's a rotten guy, isn't he?
Right.
And I said, it sounded to me like you didn't do your job.
That's exactly,
you know?
Right.
And yeah. So it was a good learning experience of people who are working at a job, listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and so that was a valuable lesson.
Yeah.
So then from there, went up to the Van Nuys plant, and they wanted me to do all the cars for the magazines. In other words, warm them over, make sure everything worked right. And Car and Driver had a double nickel. Who could go 55 the fastest? So they invited Corvette, everybody. And I built a Firebird for this thing. And of course, you went back there and everybody was cheating. You know, I mean,
right. Yeah, that's racing.
And, yeah. And so we did a lap and I did 134 or something. And the Corvette can only do 132.5. So I was just laughing my ass off, you know, because we had more competition between us and Chevrolet than we did between
Ford.
Yeah. And so, anyway, we're in having lunch, and Don Sherman, who's a writer at the time, comes in and he says, "Callies, how come you got 50 pounds in your front tires?" I said, "I don't have 50 pounds in it." He said, "I just checked it." God, how could that happen? So then the Corvette guys left and they're putting air in all their tires, you know. And anyway, they beat me by a half mile an hour. So coming back from that trip, I'm in New Mexico and I'm going along, I'm booting it pretty good, probably 110 or something.
Yeah.
And I'm looking in my rearview mirror and I see this something back there getting bigger and bigger, and I'm going,
something's catching.
Damn. You know, I don't want to get a ticket.
Right.
So I start backing off. And pretty soon, this guy in a Dodge van comes up next to me and goes, "Let's race." And I'm going. So anyway, I said, "No, let's pull over at the next gas deal." So he had a Hemi in the back of it.
In the back of the back van.
Yeah, it was cool. That was really cool.
Run down.
How's this brick catching up with
you? Yeah,
me?
Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And so then from there, in 83, Bob Dorn was the chief engineer. And they were going to have the Fiero be the pace car in Indy. So Bob called me and said, "Look, it's your program. Make it happen." Okay, so I called Agajania, who was then at Indy and was the guy who watched the speedway and made sure that the car was good. And I go, "Look at," I said, "what does the car have to do?" He said, "Well, it's got to go 125 and it's got to stop in 500 feet. I hung up the phone, called Bob Dorn. I said, "Bob, we're screwed."
Right.
I said, "We dropped this thing out of a plane. It can't go 125,
right,
you know?"
Right.
Yeah. So Bob said, "Well, do what you got to do." So I only had 6 months, and I built a new engine block, cylinder head, crankshaft, and I went to John Deere for the block because I wanted a high nickel block, and so we got that done, but built all those parts. And of course, I had some in the group. One was Tim Peterson, Al Flixa, really great guys. And they were working everything on their end to get this stuff happening as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, it comes to in November, we got our first engine running. Now, the original engine only made 110 horsepower. On a good day, okay? So we built this engine, and a fellow by the name of Paul Vanderly, Vanderly Engines in Mississippi, I go with Paul because he was an airflow cylinder head guy.
Right.
So Paul took this cast iron head and welded it and made it heavy. And the first engine made 240 horsepower.
Wow.
So Pontiac said, "Well, that's bullshit. You can't do that." I said, "Well, let's bring it back and put it on our DC electric dyno."
Right.
So it came back, made the horsepower, and they go,
"How?
Wow." You know?
Yeah.
So from that, I did an aluminum head, two versions of the aluminum head, and that started I had to build two cars for Indy Pace Car. One is with Fred Bottomeyer, who's a Fiero guy, and the other one's with Penske. Because it's a pace car, and he won that year, and he kept that car.
All right.
And
you had some problems out of the gearbox too, didn't you?
Well, when I in November, when I was testing, I started out like 70, 80, 90, 100, 110, and I was coming off turn 4, I don't know, 115 or something like that, and the gearbox goes boom and blows in half. The engine falls back.
Ooh.
Oil's everywhere on the track, but somehow I didn't crash the car.
Wow.
So I'm called back to Pontiac and said, what other transmission do we have? Future, what can we use? There's nothing, John. I go, oh, Jesus. So I'm driving again back to the desert proving grounds, and I'm going, well, there's a guy in San Francisco built gearboxes for road racing. So I get off, get in a phone toll booth, and I get his number and call him. And I go, look, I'm kind of in a predicament. I need a transmission a lot better than what I have.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you know, I might be able to help you, John. He said, when can you get some? We had a four-speed and a new five-speed. He said, when can you get them out here? I said, I'll have them air freighted out. So I got back to the desert proving, jumped on a plane to San Francisco, go over to the bridge. And when I go down and find his place, it's a little building. And I walk in, it's like you got one 110 bulb in it.
Right.
I'm going, this guy's going to help us? You know, I go, wow. But anyway, I get in there and I go, hey, did you get the train? Oh, yeah, I got them all apart and backed. Cool, that's a good start. Uh-huh. So we go back there and I said, well, what do you think you can do? He said, well, we can make all billet shafts. We'll get rid of the synchros and make dog clutches. And, you know, I think you can, it'll work. And I said, well, I got to have it in 30 days. He goes, 30 days? And I said, yeah, I got to be back at Indy to test it. So what I didn't know is he knew the chief engineer at Allison Transmission and was real close buddies. So I get a hold of him, and I tell him my story. I need help. So he assigns two engineers to work with this guy to get the design done. So 30 days later, transmission shows up at the proving grounds, and I throw it in the car. I knew he had a five-mile oval there, and I go and drive the crap out of it and staying together.
It's bulletproof.
You know? Yeah. So I go, well, that's cool, except shifting a dog clutch transmission, a lot of people don't know. So when you're at Indy, people want to test drive the pace car, you know, some celebrities.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And you'd hear them go, yeah. And so, anyway, I go back for the February test, and Hanky Jane said, well, and it was like 50 degrees. So got the car warmed up, went out and started doing it, and finally got up to speed, went over 125. Stopped in 500 feet, and I come in, and he says, you're in.
Wow.
I said, cool. And I said, look, last year the Corvette was here. What did it run? He said, I think it ran 131 and four laps. You mind if I try it? I said, no. So I did a 135.5 average for four laps. Yeah. And so we were the first four cylinders since the beginning of Indy. You know, so it was kind of, you know, had a lot of fun.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so then from there, that started the race car program. And, of course, we were in boat racing, road racing, drag racing. I mean, it just everything. So
you were involved with the Bandit project, too, weren't you?
Yeah,
I thought so.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, it was just crazy, you know. So I was out of an average year.
What was your title at this time? Like,
my unofficial title was motorsports manager.
Okay. All right.
And so I had at the proving grounds, I had two draftsmen and two other engineers working with me.
Okay.
And I think in the 6 years, I did like 150 race parts.
Oh wow.
And what made it work is I'd go to a vendor and say, look, I'd like you to build a manifold or build something. Well, at GM, they wanted, if you were going to buy something, and buy, they wanted to own it. They wanted to buy the tooling. They went, well, these guys are not interested. And so I'd say, okay, look, to get this project going, I want five parts. But what you're really doing is I'm going to pay for your tooling in those five pieces. You own the tooling, and then you sell it,
from your own.
Yeah.
And so it was successful, wholly against GM rules.
Right.
And I was the only one that could write a PO and sign up to pay for it. So my boss, Bob Dorn, said, look, I don't know that I can stand behind you if something happens, so think about this. If you're going to do it, be careful you do it correctly. And if it benefits Pontiac, you don't have a problem.
Yeah, you know? Overlook
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so anyway, I'm building GTP cars. I mean, spending some pretty big money.
Yeah.
And I have this guy's flying out who's an auditor from GM to look at our stuff. Well, we had back then books you'd open, and each had a bunch of pages on it, and it'd have the title on the top. So every project that was really questionable, I went and put a title that was 2 points smaller. So he'd pick
so
up.
So it didn't look as
yeah,
big.
Yeah. And so,
that's awesome.
So this guy comes out, you know, and he's got deals, and he's got a hat, and I'm going, right. Oh, shit, we're
done.
He's
like a bank teller.
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
And but anyway, we made it through it, and he didn't catch us, and you know, off we went. So it was pretty cool.
Just
and
then, by printing the headers two points smaller. That's fantastic.
We were the first ones took Don Prudhomme's funny car into the wind tunnel. So funny car, I'd never been in the wind tunnel, so that was cool.
Yeah.
And
did you guys, at the GM wind tunnel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where was that located?
GM at Warren, Michigan.
Oh, yeah. In Michigan?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so Waddell Wilson took his cars there. I mean, we worked with everybody.
Yeah.
And so out of a total 360-day year, 259 days I was gone.
Wow.
Right.
So you were just
going.
We were at the airport. I mean, it's just, you know, so it didn't work well for the home life, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
But when I look back, very few people could go to Europe and race.
Right.
Go to the boat races. I mean,
yeah. You have to do all
it's unbelievable stuff. Experience.
Yeah. You know?
And what you found is every type of racing had its own specialty. And just because they did that, you couldn't necessarily take those over to the next type of racing.
Yeah.
And so you found it. You got to be careful what you suggest or think.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's terrific. I mean, the company Morel Lifters, which I do now, Hendrix is a big customer. And we get all their dyno stuff. You know, it's unbelievable.
Right.
And they're one of the, them and ECR, and I'm sure Roush and the others, but they have these development dynamometers now that can pick out on a full engine a half a foot-pound of torque.
Wow.
So you program in what you, if it falls off, you don't want the engine to blow up. You want to stop the test. So it's really cool.
Yeah.
But these cells will change complete air in the cell about every 4 seconds.
Wow.
It's humidity controlled. I mean, it's...
Wow.
I mean, you're talking a $2 million dyno.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
Yeah.
Spin drums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all that stuff is fun for a person like me, you know?
Yeah. Because you're a tinker. Yeah. I would say you're a tinker.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
Yeah.
So John, I'm watching TV the other night, and I'm watching a show, and it's about it's Kadarian, and you pop up on.
Yeah,
tell us about Ed. I didn't know you guys knew each other.
Mm-hmm. When, well, of course, Richard and Ron, and of course, Ron passed away, but Ed, well, the first time we went out there, Ed's on the corner of his shop on the sidewalk. And he's feeding the pigeons something from lunch. And then he goes and picks up a paper, you know, just was laying there, wads it up, and he goes over to his car and rolls the window down a little bit and just throws it in there. Well, the car had stuff in it clear up
top
to here.
Bottom.
Yeah. And it would get so full, then he'd take it in the back and park it, and he'd get another one. So Ed obviously came through the Depression.
Right.
And there was nothing wasted.
Yeah.
But what I loved about Ed is when you went there, he'd say, well, what you working on? And he wanted to know what you were doing. And then he'd say, yeah, you know, back in 36, there was this airplane engine such and such, and it kind of had a similar thing. And he was just a fascinating guy.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. I mean, he is unbelievable that he's still rocking along. He still goes up to Bonneville every
year. Yeah, no, that's
it.
And so I've never met him yet, but seeing him, you know, he's what, 101?
Yeah,
he's
102.
Now.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And so you look at what he did on that first Roadster that he built.
Yeah.
A pretty incredible piece.
I love that car.
Yeah.
Have you seen the? Have you seen somebody put out a remake of that car?
Oh, did they?
And it is fantastic.
Yeah, they just did a tribute car.
Yeah, they
really.
I mean, they hit the nail on the head.
It was at SEMA.
Yeah, when I heard about it, I was like, oh, they're going to ruin it. But then when I seen it, I was like, wow.
Yeah. Is it for sale now?
I don't know if it's for sale, but I don't know who.
Did they just do one, or did they do
just
anything?
Did one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay.
It's a tribute.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, and Speedway Museum did a beautiful deal on Ed.
Yeah.
And what was fun, when I was up there taking the shape on, what I thought was cool about Speedway, on the second floor, one wall is nothing but aftermarket flathead intakes.
Wow. Yeah.
And Ed's walking up and down the thing, and he comes back. He said, well, you're missing one. He goes, what? Yeah, you're missing such and such, you know.
Wow.
That's awesome. You know,
he knows that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And what I thought was cool at the museum, on the first floor is T's, and they've got every aftermarket piece. And Winfield, you know, who you've heard of for years, he started cam grinding, and he did all the rocker arms for the Nova Speedway car.
Gene did?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, wait, this isn't Gene Winfield. This is Winfield Cams, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha.
The other Winfield.
The other Winfield.
I'm like, what?
Yeah. And see, he did the carburetors for that thing. He built a carburetor. It looked like a piece of jewelry. It was gorgeous. And GM, a friend of mine, was back there when the Novi was running, and he went down to introduce himself to Winfield, and he said, look, and I've got a wet flow bench over here. Would you like us to run one of the cars? He said, oh, sure, yeah, I got an extra one here. Take it, and yeah, I want it back today.
Right.
And anyway, he came back, and Winfield said, well, how did it do? He said, we can't help you. It's perfect.
Nice.
So it shows that the old masters. And from there, I went down, and Bruce Crower went to his ranch when he was alive. And Bruce had everything out there to build everything in the world. And he was an unbelievable craftsman himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool
That's
deal.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
So back to the Bandit car.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, we had a fellow, can't remember his name, but he was real close with the TV movie industry out there, and he got hooked up with Hal Needham to, you know, use the Firebird with the eagle on it and all the crap, and they went through I think it was seven Firebirds plus a bunch of other cars, and of course towards the end everybody's going, man, is this really going to be worth it? You know, of course the show was just
it was.
Yeah,
it was worth it.
Yeah. Probably sold another 100,000 Firebirds, you know, because
right.
of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you'll love this. When we went from the 69 to the 71 Firebird, which changed the shape, we had a dealer that had them on the shelf, and I still had some in stock of the 69s. And they said, get rid of them. So I sold 69 Firebird Trans Ams for $800.
Wow.
Wish I had one of those.
Yeah, wow. I know, yeah.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Did you have anything to do with the Super Duties, Super Duty Trans Ams?
Yes. I mean, we started with the Super Duty 4 and then all the whole Super Duty series, yeah.
That is a legendary car, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, my favorite.
God.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that the producers from the movie wanted the, what was it, the 77, and I want to say that they seen it, and it was a prototype, and they wanted it, and I feel like I feel like I read somewhere that, Pontiac was like, well, we'll give you these 76s, but we'll put the 77 stuff on it.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But all I know is when they started piling stuff up,
yeah,
you know, everybody's going, man, this will be expensive. I hope this show's good, or, you know.
Yeah. So they just gave it to them.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we got the junk back.
Right.
But
right, yeah.
What'd you get back?
Yeah.
Nothing.
A rolled Firebird.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Jumping ditches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty epic. That's pretty epic. So leading into you starting your own company. So what brought that along?
Well, I was on my seventh sales manager trying to train him that motorsports was worthwhile. And I brought him down to Indy, where at the Nationals, and I have them on the roof on the pit side. And of course, it's now about 10 o'clock, and I mean, both sides are filled with people, cars are parked everywhere. And the guy says, John, I really don't understand why we're here. And I went, I beg your pardon? He said, I don't know why we're doing this. I said, because every person in that stand that sits there for 8 hours has to drive here in something. And I'd like it to be a Pontiac. And I would think you'd want to, too. And so he wanted to go golfing.
Wow.
So I went. I've had enough of this fun.
Yeah.
You know, so I started the crankshaft company. And that went again for 6 years. And we went from, like, six employees to over 120.
Wow.
And so it's just the... You know,
right.
Rock.
Was this in Michigan? Is that
No, it was in Fostoria, Ohio.
Okay.
And so I was going from an engineer development guy to a banker.
Right.
And I didn't find that a lot of fun. You know, I wanted to create stuff.
Not, right. Yeah. That's right. Not do paperwork.
Or hear the bitches and...
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, 6 years... Rick Norton bought me out, and then I went down for Joe Lanati. And then Joe Lanati wanted to sell his place, so he said, let's see in 5 years if we can. So in 5 years, we doubled the sales, sold it to Holly.
Yeah.
And then Holly came down and said, John, why are you selling retail? I said, because that's the highest profit.
Right.
We're not doing that. I said, I beg your pardon? No, we don't do that. We're wholesale. So I said, well, been nice. See ya.
See ya.
So then I went into the camshaft business. And the fellow that owned Camshaft Machine, we joined forces, and I built a performance line with him. But then his controller stole a lot of money from him and went into... not having enough money. And
what company was that?
Camshaft Machine. Yeah.
Okay.
They're still going to down. They're been bought out, and they've got two young guys that are doing a great job.
Where are they located? Here?
No, Jackson, Michigan.
Okay, Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so then Ed Morrell and I got together on the lifters. And so I moved into the lifter business.
Yeah.
And so that's, it's going on its 21st year.
Wow.
Yeah. So had a bunch of different careers, a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
You know, and...
So you've been working with Morrell for 20...
21 years, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And I were partners in the lifter thing.
So. Okay. I knew that you were doing the lifters. Yeah. So I didn't know it had been that long.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
So anyway, it's been a ride.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, let's talk a little bit about cars.
Yeah.
So obviously you mentioned earlier that you had Chapon,
mm-hmm.
Which is a 40 Chevrolet. 40 with Chevrolet with a Pontiac
Pro Stock motor in it.
Yeah, Pro Stock motor. So talk a little bit about it. It's if anybody wants to see the car, it is at the Speedway Museum in Lincoln, Nebraska, right?
So, right.
And it's there on permanent display now.
Yeah, so we're going to have pictures. We'll definitely have pictures of this one.
So. Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about that car.
The start of that car was, could we make something that you could drive on the street, go to the drag strip, run the mile, and I chose to run the mile with the thing. And I never made it over 200, but it was like 198 or 197.
You got close.
Yeah. And part of it was timing. You know, we then had COVID hit, so they weren't racing.
Right.
And but the car, I ended up having 19,000 street miles on it. You know, so it was pretty durable.
Yeah. And it was what, 555 cubic inch Pontiac?
557, yeah.
557.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it had Cali's heads on it.
Right. And our Pro Stock heads, I did. And then it had an IR manifold that I did with Jim Kinsler with 3-inch butterflies. You know, so the one thing that was tough tuning it was a little opening was a whole bunch of air.
Right.
So getting the idle off, idling that took a bunch of work and got that working pretty good.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it was time to... Speedway Motors is just an absolute fantastic place.
Yeah.
And the people there are beyond reproach. They're just super.
Yeah.
So if you've never been there, you got to go.
Yeah.
Because it is...
It's on my list for sure.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's killer. Been. It's killer.
Yeah.
So then I went up to the 40th Fiero reunion in Pontiac, had a good time, and I'd never built, I mean, other than race cars, never built a street car. So
let's go back to the Chopin real quick.
Yeah.
So we're kind of glossing over some stuff that you did to it. I mean, you hand built the chassis on it.
Yep.
Right.
And the interior, everything.
Yeah, everything.
So the trim.
Yeah.
He handmade the trim.
Yeah, yeah, and all of the interior was is like fighter.
Aluminum,
fighter plane themed.
And then I went and put an up pressed a hole in like the floorboards up and then underlit it. So
yeah, it had double floorboards.
You could light up the floorboards, the outside running boards.
Yeah.
And the running boards I had to make new in aluminum because I widened the rear fenders an inch and a half.
Right.
So that everything look right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was just hours. I had a little over 9,000 hours in that car.
I remember when you first came out here, I don't think you had the car completely together yet. And it was, you had some spots in the chassis that you could jack the car up with.
Both sides would come up. Yeah. So like
it's just little things that you thought about that were absolutely amazing to me. That, you know,
how many hours did you have in the valve covers?
Yeah, the valve cover, that was a huge,
those were
huge deal. And, those valve covers were probably 3,000 hours.
Wow.
You know,
they were a work of art.
I'll tell you,
they were a work of art, man.
I spent all day on my back working on motor mounts in a small block Chevy. I get it, John. You win, sir.
No doubt. Well, the other thing is that, you know, you wanted to break 200 was your thing. And so you were running nitrous on that thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, you had it in the wind tunnel.
Yep.
You know, you tried all these different things to it. And
Didn't you pull the parachutes out here on 64?
385.
Before it was open, we went out there and did a test to make sure the chute would work.
On the city street.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. Yeah, it was fun. That was fun.
Yeah. That's epic.
And it just, it's like this Simca here. See, I had...
It's a 48?
48. And I had built another one almost 35 years ago.
Yeah.
So this was my newer version.
Yeah.
And, of course, I used an LT... two in it, and so it's direct injected, and you know, put a small cam in it and ported the heads and did the usual crap you do, and It made 650 horsepower at 7,500. So,
and what's the weight on that car?
The weight, this car weighs right at about 2,850.
And wheelbase?
Yeah, 83 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I took this car to the wind tunnel, and it runs straight as an arrow. And
wow.
the only thing that you have to be careful of is you have to run under 30 pounds in the back tires. And I'm saying that might be 27, 28. And then when it power shifts, it's got an 8-speed automatic in it.
So it wants
it to stays
get...
straight. But if you get over 30 pounds...
It wants to get sideways.
Oh, it's everywhere. Mm. Yeah, you can't do it.
Does it buck a lot on the bumps on the road?
No.
Really?
No, the Cimarron's good.
Wow.
But the shocks are what makes that
yes.
work. Yeah.
Because, you know, the rule of thumb when you build a hot rod is you always want to be, like, somewhere around 103 to 106 inches because it bucks on you, right? Like a T-model wheelbase or something like that.
Yeah. And it's, but, again, you know, we've come a long ways in what is, was accepted as a rule
right.
and not necessarily proven, you know, if you spend your time.
Well, and it probably helps the independent rear suspension, coilovers.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a cool deal, and... This, you know, this was a fun car because you had to have a full cage in it, but I wanted to hide the cage just like I did in the other. And, you know, so just did a lot of things. It just takes time. It's like it's, we were talking earlier, the grill in it that I built, that was 80 hours to build that grill.
Right.
Yeah.
And nobody put 80 hours in a damn grill.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah. You know? But you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down to the finest of details. That thing has so much on it that I'm just in awe of. It's unreal.
Yeah, it's a nice car.
Yeah. And I like how you integrate roll cages.
Yeah.
The 40, the integrated roll cage on that was just unreal.
Yeah,
I think
for
it's
sure.
Epic.
And you see on this, I put 15-inch rotor, Brembo rotors. So it's very close on the back of the hat to the wheel. And but I had Rose in the car, my wife, and she said, "Is this as fast as the Shapon?" I said, "Well, let's go out and see." So we came around here, we pulled on to 64, and she had the laptop, and I said, "Look, at 1, 2, 3, you hit the go button, and I'll hit the gas." So we hit it, we went dead stop, 110 to zero in 8.2 seconds.
Wow. And she rides with you on that?
Yeah.
She loves it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, with, my wife wouldn't be riding. Yeah.
With the Shapon, we were up at the... Pigeon Forge, and you know how you line the streets and people.
Yeah.
So Rose goes, "Well, I'd like to drive it." And I said, "Get in it." So she pulls out to the stoplight, and right next to where the 32 Ford pulls up, and I go, "Oh, this is not going to be good." So the light turns green. She lights it up, and
yes.
goes, and luckily there were no cops.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's awesome because there's cops everywhere.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why we actually stopped going. I got mad because they were.
Yeah.
You brought a lot of money to town, and I said, "This is crazy for you guys to be this way."
Right. Yeah.
You know,
they're rough. They're rough.
Yeah, but they almost have to do it everywhere now. It's just it's sad.
You know? So why'd you wind up in Memphis, Tennessee?
Yeah, how did you get down here?
Well, you know, when I was in, I was in Fostoria with the crank plant, and then Rick bought me out, and I came down here for Joe Lanotti. That's how that worked.
That's what brought you here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've been here ever since then?
Yeah, yeah. I've been here 26 years now.
Yeah.
So, what year would that have been then? Probably
26. It would have
26.
Been late '90s.
Oh, late '90s.
Late '90s. Yeah.
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 Okay. Wow. So, yeah.
Well, we're glad you did move to Memphis.
Yeah, no doubt.
26 years, you're a Memphian.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Well, we can claim him because he's done a lot of good
awesome.
Stuff.
Because he's awesome.
Yeah. That's right. Well, and your shop is amazing. You know, everybody always talks about your shop, how clean it is, how amazing it is, and you'd eat off the floor and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, you can never come to my shop.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
He comes to mine all the time.
Yeah.
He's all right.
I was going to say, at least you have the concrete floor.
I have concrete.
Oh, do you?
He has concrete now.
It's just dirt.
Come on.
It's just dirt colored.
Yeah.
His floor was plastic thermos bottles for
yeah. You know, it's funny. It's when I built the first Simca, I was in Burbank, California, and I had a one-car garage, and my TIG welder was chained to the ceiling hanging down. I couldn't have room on the floor to put it.
No room.
No. And at the time, I remember when they first came out with Emeron paint. And, of course, it was back then real expensive, you know. So
right.
I can remember the paint store guy told me how to mix it up. So I mixed it up, and I put it out in the driveway. And I saw I'm looking out, and I'm seeing smoke come off of it. And I went over in the stake, and it had hardened already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I went back, and I said, look, it didn't work real well for me. You know? And the guy was nice enough to replace it, but it was my screw-up of how I
mixed it. You mixed too much hardener
in
there.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's and, of course, back reaction. Then, you didn't wear masks when you were spraying.
Right,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible stuff.
Yeah. I did that for years, but that was... You know, just because I was an idiot.
Yeah.
There's plenty of those, right?
Well, no, you know, no I argument. Mean, today you look around and you look at the safety that we try and do
yeah.
and when you're doing stuff. And, you know, I mean, I'm grinding something, I got a damn mask on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I never used to do that.
Right.
But I do now.
Yeah.
I guess age brings some sense.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Well,
I'm getting a little bit out of
time. Well, I was going to say, at the same time, we... You know, as humans, we've learned as well, like, oh, maybe this is bad for us, you know? Like, yeah. And then the OSHA guy comes in and says, you need a mask, you know? So, yeah.
So what are you working on these days?
Yeah. Alan started this Fiero GT. And so it's 1986 at 92,000 original miles. And the original frame is a very sturdy frame. And it has a cradle in the front and a cradle in the rear. So I've got an LS, called an LS4. It's 335 inches, and used aftermarket heads on it, and a billet turbo, and I've got the new Holley Pro Series, and so now you don't need the laptop in the car, which is kind of cool, but it's set up to where it'll run on 8 pounds, 12 pounds, or 16 pounds. So I spent a lot of money on pieces in the engine. Cylinder heads are all O-ringed. Oil squirters come up to the underneath of all the pistons.
Wow.
You know, so.
Wow. Yeah.
A lot of specific stuff to keep it together so I can lean on it and not worry about it.
Yeah.
What are you planning to do with it?
Drive it, have fun.
Have fun.
Yeah. I was going to run it in the mile, but they wanted me to put in a 4-post
cage,
and I don't want to do that, so. I guess I'll have
it's technically
to do it.
A factory car, though, isn't it?
Pardon?
It's technically a factory car, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and but the thing is, he said you can run 150, but you can't run over that.
Well, yeah.
You know, and I said, well, that isn't what I want to do, you know. So I guess we'll go late one night on some freeway. And
sounds like a good idea. Yeah. You sign me up. When you do that, you just let me know. I'll be there.
Another trip on 385.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm excited about it because when I look at the aero numbers, it should be able to go about 215.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. So,
so is it running a front-wheel drive transmission?
Yes, in the back. And that was kind of interesting. The transmission is, well, it's actually was all-wheel drive in an Arcadia. And then it turned it into a two-wheel drive. Put a positive traction unit in it, and then the transmission company in Pennsylvania reworked it. So we think we're up around 650 foot-pounds of torque it can take, but I'm counting on the rear wheels spinning before you're going
to
tear up the transmission.
Yeah.
You know? And it's all turning out pretty good. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll be fun. I'm hoping to have it done by May 1st. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just so before my birthday.
Very
that's
soon.
Good.
Yeah.
Take Mike for a ride. That's good. I didn't know you were planning on it being done that early.
Yeah.
That's great. That's awesome.
How long have you been working on?
Started last year in September.
Okay.
Wow.
You know,
that's
doing the design, doing all that crap.
Yeah.
I think the funnest part of it is the design team, which was head by John Chinello, who did all the Firebird stuff, and under him was John Caffaro, and John Caffaro worked with me on all the race car stuff. So I got a hold of John and said, look, I want to do this car, and so he did some drawings and stuff, and that's what got everything going.
Yeah. The drawings are
epic. Oh, yeah, it's killer.
Yeah. Yeah, the renderings are
awesome. I can't wait to see it in real life. Yeah. I was kind of hoping it would be here.
Yeah.
Well,
I really was. Because we talked about it.
Well, you see, right now, this fellow in Bartlett who is doing the interior, to me, is a killer guy. And he's got people that work for him that are excellent as well. But he has a real concept of... So he took things that Caffaro did and then said, well, what do you think about this? Killer. I mean, you know.
What's his name, John? What's his name?
Dave Bowen.
Okay.
Auto Interiors.
So he brought the aspects from the outside and tied it into the inside.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away too much because I think it'll be epic. But I mean, it's,
you know, when you're around people that are talented, it's fun to do stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Dad, like I was down there today and he goes, the console was really screwed up. So there's another guy in Bartlett that does 3D modeling.
Right.
He made a whole new console.
Right here in Memphis, Tennessee.
Right here in Tennessee.
That's awesome.
Well, nowadays, like, you can 3D print anything. Marion's 3D printing blowers. Yeah.
But you see, the thing is, having somebody that knows what to do to make the form,
right.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
I do want to bring up the fact, though, that at one point in time last year when we talked, you were going to get rid of the other car and you were going to be done building
cars. Yeah.
Right. And then it seemed like 3 weeks later, he's like, Mike, I'm working on this car. Like, thank God. I'm so glad you're working on the car.
There's always a next one.
Not going to stop.
Well, you know, it's creating something is a lot of fun.
It's amazing.
Absolutely.
And I love building the stuff.
I was going to say, what are you going to do? What are you going to do if you stop?
No. I mean, you
gotta he's going to let me come use his tools.
Right.
he made sure that you cleaned everything up afterwards. That's right.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I don't think I'd keep up with this cleaning regimen.
Well, one thing we didn't talk about either that's sitting back here is the motorcycle... trailer that you built for the Simca.
Yeah.
So it's a one wheel trailer.
Yep.
And you've got like 9 billion hours in that thing too. Yeah.
Well, like I say, anybody out there, maybe you guys can take a picture of it.
Yeah.
I'm ready to have somebody else enjoy it.
Yeah.
So.
And you built the motorcycles that are on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, tell us about that, John. What's the story with the bikes?
Well, one, I was thinking of a beach bike that you have a pedal and a motor on it.
Yeah.
And that was the first one I did. And then I looked at it and I said, well, that's kind of funny. It's got an electric start on it. Can you believe that? Two cycle with electric start. And I said, I want something meaner. So that's when I built the second one. And that uses a Honda 125 on it. Then I bought a whole bike. And then I went to 19 inch wheels. I went to 140,000 spokes, so it had some beef to it.
Yeah.
And then put some bigger tires on it. And so, and the thing is, that damn thing will run 60, but it's not a lot of fun.
It's a little sketchy.
A little sketchy. Yeah.
I feel like I need to test drive it.
Oh, sure. I'll watch you. Oh, that's funny.
I love those things. I think they're fantastic. The first time I seen it, I was like, wow, 125 two-stroke, right? 125 two-stroke.
No, that's a four-stroke.
It's four-stroke.
The other one's a two-stroke.
One's a two-stroke on a bicycle.
Yeah.
That might be my gateway to get another motorcycle. The wife, she might let me do that.
Yeah, go look.
It's not really a motorcycle,
it's like a bicycle.
Right.
Well, and the other thing is that it's 50 cc's, so you don't require a license.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So we should go in half, so I'll get to 125 and kill myself.
There you go. There you go, Mike.
Sounds good. I like it.
Well, trying to think what else we got.
I think that's it.
I don't know.
I think that's how we wrap a bow on this thing.
Yeah, I know, right? Pretty easily done, I guess. But,
John, thank you so much.
Well, thank you guys for coming
here. Yeah, I think, cool. You know, it's awesome. We've been wanting to have you on here for a long time, and
you catered for us.
Yes,
I know, that's right. Yeah, that's thank you so much for
that's Mama. She did.
Yeah,
that.
I think we're thanking the wrong person.
Yeah. Make sure you tell her that we are extremely grateful. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
it really
for
was.
Sure. Yeah, well, we'll be looking forward to the Fiero. That's going to be
cool.
Really cool.
Yeah,
to see.
Me too.
Yeah,
fun stuff. Wait.
I need a ride in it.
Yeah. All right.
All right, guys. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you, and we'll see you guys on the next.